There's this German proverb that most kids learn when they're trying to weasel out of doing their chores. It goes, if you say A, you have to say B.
Wer I sagt, muss auch B sagen. It's a classic.
Right. And usually it's pretty harmless. You know, if you start the dishes, you have to dry them. If you agree to go to the party, you actually have to show up. But today we are applying that simple logic to something that is, well, terrifyingly complex. We're talking about the end of life.
Specifically, the A of supporting the right to die, and the very, very uncomfortable B of actually making that death happen safely.
It's a heavy pivot, for sure, but it's one we need to make.
Absolutely. We're diving into a review by Clemens Lynschinger. He's a jurist, an author, and a committed humanist. And he's reviewing a book that has caused quite a stir, Selbstbestimmtes.
Self-Determined Dying by Jessica Duber.
Exactly.
And before we go any further at all, we really need to pause, because the B in this whole equation, the practical side, is not something to treat lightly.
Absolutely not. And we need to be crystal clear. We are analyzing your book review. We're looking at the legal and philosophical arguments.
This deep dive is not a recommendation for suicide. It is not an endorsement of any method we discuss.
And if you're listening to this and you're in a crisis, please just stop the audio.
Yeah, there are people who can help you right now. The source itself lists the telephone emergency service, that's 142 in Austria, or the social psychiatric emergency service.
Please use those resources. What we're doing here is purely an academic and ethical analysis of a text. We're exploring the ideas Lynschinger raises, nothing more.
Okay, ground rules set. So let's get back to Lynschinger's premise. He calls Duber's book a handbook for rational suicide. I mean, that phrase alone, rational suicide, it feels like an oxymoron to so many people. It feels cold.
It does, doesn't it?
Meh.
But that is exactly the tension Lynschinger is exploring. He's reviewing this book through the lens of safety. His whole argument is that if society is going to allow A, the right to die, then keeping people in the dark about B, the method, is actually negligent.
He uses a really disturbing phrase for the alternative, the torturous free death.
It's a visceral image, but it's based on data. When people decide to end their lives without access to reliable information, the failure rate is high.
And failure here isn't just waking up, it can mean permanent brain damage, organ failure.
Or a prolonged agonizing passing. That is the risk minimization angle he's talking about. It sounds clinical, but it's really about preventing agony.
So what does the book actually detail?
Well, Lynschinger points out that Duber's book goes into specific methods, things like chloroquine protocols or using inert gases like helium. Now, he's a lawyer, not a doctor.
Right.
He says, you know, I can't vouch for the medical efficacy. But what he appreciates is that Duber relentlessly details what can go wrong.
Like what? Because I think a lot of people just assume, oh, I'll take some pills and fall asleep.
That's the Hollywood myth. And Lynschinger highlights the practical, even gruesome details from the book. You know, if you use a mask for gas, it can slip.
Oh, wow.
If you take the wrong antiemetic, you can vomit the medication back up and end up choking or surviving with severe damage.
So it's not a how-to guide in the simple sense. It's more of a here is the reality of the biology you are up against.
That's a great way to put it. It challenges that paternalistic idea that keeping people ignorant protects them. Lynschinger's point is that in this context, silence is dangerous. Knowledge is harm reduction.
It's a very humanist perspective, then. Treat people like adults who can handle the truth.
Exactly.
But the author, Jessica Duber, this is the thing that surprised me. You'd expect a book like this to be written by, I don't know, a palliative care doctor. She's not.
No, she's an autodidact. She taught herself.
Yeah, and in the medical world, that's usually a giant red flag, right? I did my own research, can lead to some terrible places.
Usually, yes. But Lynschinger sees this through a specific lens. He argues that there's something democratizing about it. It pushes back against the idea that this kind of knowledge belongs only to the institutions.
And she did have experts review the new edition, which helps.
It does. It adds a layer of credibility. But he has to put a warning label on it. He says, look, the reader needs to know she isn't a doctor so they can weigh the risks. It's all about autonomy. You have the right to the information, but you also have the heavy responsibility of verifying it.
Which gets even heavier when you look at where you're standing when you read the book. We have to talk about the geography of the law, because the review makes it seem like crossing the border from Germany to Austria is like stepping onto a different planet legally.
It effectively is. This is really the core of his legal critique. If you are in Germany, the Federal Constitutional Court dropped a massive ruling a few years ago.
Okay.
They basically said that the right to a self-determined death is a fundamental expression of personal autonomy.
And that applies to everyone, not just the terminally ill.
Theoretically, yes. That's what was so radical. The German ruling decoupled the right to die from a medical condition. Your motive isn't the state's business. Your life belongs to you.
Okay, so that's Germany. A implies B. Now, you drive across the border to Salzburg or Vienna. What happens?
You hit a brick wall. A big one. It's called the Sterbefugungsgesetz.
The Assisted Suicide Decree Act?
Yes, but Linschinger is incredibly biting here. He suggests it should be renamed the Prevention of Assisted Dying Act.
Wow. Why? Is it just a ban in disguise?
It's a bureaucratic labyrinth designed to wear you down. Unlike Germany, Austria demands a valid motive. You can't just be tired of life. You have to prove you have a serious, permanent, or terminal illness.
So the state gets to audit your suffering?
They do. And if you pass that audit, the process has just begun. You need two doctors to sign off. One has to have a palliative medicine qualification.
Yeah.
Then there's a mandatory cooling off period to make sure you really mean it. Then you have to go to a notary to make it official.
It sounds like closing on a house, but infinitely more grim.
And more restrictive. Because even if you jump through all those flaming hoops, Austria allows exactly one method, one substance, sodium pentobarbital.
That's the gold standard drug for this, isn't it?
It is. It's effective. It's painless.
Yeah.
But it is strictly controlled. You can only get it if you complete that entire legal obstacle course.
Okay, so that brings us back to Duber's book. She's talking about chloroquine, about helium. Why?
Because in Germany, even though you have the right to die, the state doesn't just hand you the pentobarbital. There's a market gap. So people look for alternatives.
Yeah.
But here's the trap. If you are in Austria, you read this book, and you decide, I can't wait for the notary. I'm going to use the helium method. Or worse, help someone else use it.
You're in serious trouble.
Very serious. You're bypassing the one legal channel. And that exposes you to charges under paragraph 75 murder or paragraph 77 killing on request.
So Linschinger is basically screaming at his readers, do not use the German advice in Austria.
Exactly. It's wild that the same act is fundamental autonomy 5 kilometers north and potential murder 5 kilometers south. The geography of where you sit defines your bodily rights.
There's another legal twist here that I found just bizarre. You mentioned Linschinger describes the book's contents, but he deliberately skips the details. He censors himself.
He has to. He's dancing around the word verbe.
The advertising ban.
Right. And advertising here is very broad. It prohibits praising or advertising methods suitable for suicide.
So if he says this helium method is very effective, he could be breaking the law.
Arguably, yes.
Yeah.
He could be accused of encouraging suicide by making it sound appealing.
It's incredibly ironic. He's trying to warn people about safety risks, but he can't discuss the details of those risks because the law says that's advertising.
It's a complete catch-22. Linschinger calls it a scandal. He says this ban violates freedom of speech and actually endangers people. How can you make an informed decision if the experts are legally muzzled?
So he keeps the method part vague to stay out of jail.
Exactly. He explicitly states in the review, I am leaving this part out. It's a form of protest as much as it is self-preservation.
Let's shift gears a bit. We've covered the law and the practical risks, but the part of the review that really stuck with me was the philosophy, specifically around mental illness.
This is where Duber and Linschinger really challenge the status quo. The standard view is simple. If you're mentally ill, your will is compromised.
Right. The depression is talking, not you. We treat the desire to die as a symptom of the disease, not a real choice.
And Duber pushes back on that with a very hard-line concept, determinism.
Meaning?
Well, she asks, is anyone's will truly free? Are you? Am I? We're all products of our genetics, our trauma, our culture. She argues that the flawless, independent will is a fiction. It doesn't exist for healthy people either.
Okay, so if nobody's truly free, then singling out the mentally ill as not free is discriminative.
That's the argument. She calls it paternalistic. Linschinger highlights this quote from her. Autonomy doesn't mean all determinants are switched off. It means a person can make a decision that makes sense to them.
That's a slippery slope, though. If a person is in the grip of a delusion, and that delusion tells them to jump.
Duber would argue that if the suffering is real to them and the decision is consistent with their reality, then denying them agency is a violation of their rights. It's a radical position for sure.
Yeah.
But it forces you to question where we draw the line between protecting someone and imprisoning them in a life they don't want.
There's another group where this line gets even blurrier. the dementia paradox. I think this is the one that really keeps people up at night.
It's the most heartbreaking part of the whole debate.
Because with dementia, the person who made the decision disappears.
Slowly, yes. And the legal problem is insight. To access assisted dying, you generally need to understand what you were doing at the moment you do it. But by the time dementia gets really bad, that insight is often gone.
So you're trapped.
Unless you act too early. And that's the tragedy, Lynchinger points out. The current laws incentivize people to die while they're still relatively healthy because they're terrified of missing that window of competence.
But Duber brings up this conflict between the previous will and the current state. Can you break that down?
Sure. Imagine you write a decree today. If I get dementia, I want to die. 10 years later, you have advanced dementia. You don't know your own name. But you seem happy.
Okay.
You're sitting in the garden, enjoying the sun. You're content in your current state. Does the piece of paper from 10 years ago, the previous will, have the right to kill the person sitting in that garden?
That's the million-dollar ethical question. Which self is the authentic one?
Exactly. The intellectual one who feared the loss of dignity, or the biological one that's just existing in the moment. Lynchinger doesn't give an answer, but he shows our laws are completely ill-equipped to handle that.
It's terrifying. It really is.
Yeah.
Amidst all this, the law, the philosophy Lynchinger points out a gap in the market that I hadn't even thought about. The death pill.
Or the lack of one.
It seems absurd when you say it out loud. We can send a rover to Mars, but we don't have a pill specifically designed to end a human life reliably and peacefully.
Except for pentobarbital, which is old tech and highly restricted.
Mm-hmm.
Duber points out that most suicide methods are actually overdoses of medicines designed to cure you, to keep you alive.
So the body fights them.
Right. That's why they cause side effects like vomiting or seizures.
So the A and B principle applies to science, too.
Exactly. The argument is, if we as a society say, A, you have the right to die, then we are hypocrites if we don't do B and develop the science to make it painless.
It's like telling someone they have the right to drive, but refusing to build roads or cars.
That's a very apt analogy. And it's dangerous.
Speaking of jury rigging, I think we have to talk about the reviewer's personal confession, because after all these pages of analysis, Lynchinger drops his professional mask.
He does. And it's such a human moment. He admits that, you know, despite all this research, he wouldn't use the methods in the book.
He has his own plan A.
He does. A bottle of very smoky whiskey. And Mozart.
Specifically, the Queen of the Night, Aria, from The Magic Flute.
On a loop.
It's such a romantic, vivid image. The intellectual jurist going out with opera and scotch.
But then he immediately critiques himself. He applies that same ruthless logic to his own fantasy.
What does he say?
He basically says, actually, alcohol is terrible at this. It causes vomiting. It's unreliable. I would probably just wake up with a massive hangover and the opera would still be playing.
It really grounds the whole discussion, doesn't it? He's not just a cold analyst. He's a human being grappling with his own mortality.
And that's where the value of this review really lands for me. It's not about promoting death. Mm-hmm. It is about promoting competence.
Competence and autonomy.
Yes. Lynchinger is saying that a legal right like in Germany is just paper if you don't have the practical knowledge to exercise it safely. But strict regulations, like in Austria, stifle the very discourse we need to keep people safe.
He's praising Duber not because she have all the answers,
but because she has the courage to ask the questions that the state is trying to silence.
It all circles back to that opening proverb. If we say A, if we value freedom, do we have the guts to say B?
I think he leaves us with that challenge. You know, if we call ourselves a free society, do we have a duty to ensure that the end of life is supported by science and transparency rather than forcing people into the shadows?
It's a question of whether we're willing to face the messy reality of our values or if we just prefer the comfortable theory.
And facing the messy reality is what the deep dive is all about.
We'll leave you to mull that over until the next deep dive.